We don't talk about it much in our podcasts, but our Effective Manager Conference, our Effective Communications Conference, and our Effective Interviewer Conference are all available to be delivered in-house at your corporation, your firm, your organization. We have over 1,000 clients the world over on all the continents except Antarctica who have paid us to travel to them, customize our training, and deliver more focused training without the opportunity cost of individuals traveling. Depending upon the size of the group, you can save some money. And again, totally tailored to your culture, your company, your people. If there's somebody in your firm that we need to talk to, let us know or have them contact us. We look forward to it.
Welcome to Manage Tools. Planning an offsite, part 5, the last in our series. Here we go. All right, Danny, we've talked about choosing the city, about writing your request for proposal, identifying potential hotels and submitting your RFP or request for proposal, and about choosing the hotel. So now we have two parts left, how to work with the hotel and then what to do after your offsite. So let's get into it. So how do we work with hotels?
It's a little bit of an art and some science when it comes to working with hotels. And as we said throughout the series, our guidance here is based on our years, many years of working with hundreds of hotels. And it's everything that I wish I had been told when I first started, because I learned a lot of this the hard way. So when it comes to working with hotels, number one, get everything in writing. Number two, know who all the players are, who you're going to be working with. Number three, how to ship materials to a hotel. We're going to cover that. And we're going to cover following up. And then the last rule, and it really kind of goes throughout this whole series or throughout this whole process, is to be nice.
Okay. So our first rule when working with hotels is to get everything in writing.
Yes.
And you agree, right? My experience has been, if it's not in writing, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And sometimes even when it is in writing, it still might not happen.
Right. But at least give yourself a shot of it happening by getting in writing. And folks, it's not because they're bad people. It's not because you can't trust them. There's just a lot of hands, a lot of different people involved. And the BEO, right, which is kind of the representation of the whole thing, is what gets passed around to all the people involved. And if it's not in writing and it's not in there, it just ain't happening.
Yeah, the banquet event order, the BEO, is the documents that the hotel uses to communicate everything that needs to happen about your meeting, from the person you're booking with in sales or catering to the actual banquet staff or houseman, or even down to the janitorial staff who may be coming in and cleaning up. So that's their communication system. So if it's not in writing, if it's not on that BEO, then they don't know what needs to happen. And you need to keep in mind that the person that you book with, that you are negotiating the contract with, is probably not going to be the same person who actually fulfills that contract. Often at hotels, they have one person who does the contracting, and then they pass you off to somebody else who then actually is kind of the lead on your meeting. And so again, all that stuff needs to be in writing, because that's how they're communicating as they're passing you through everybody at the hotel.
That's right. And when something doesn't happen, which often it does, the first question is always, is it in the BEO? And it's a great backup. And of course, you would have a copy of the BEO with you at all times.
Right.
Just saying. I'm sure we'll talk about that. So when you're talking to an individual who's laying out the food or whatever, and there's a question of, hey, this was supposed to have happened, the first thing they're going to ask you, or your first response is going to be, and here's where it is in the BEO. Because otherwise, they've got to look for approval to get it done. If it's in the BEO, they go, that's their authorization to do what was committed to you. Otherwise, they've got to go up the chain and say, oh, can we do that? Because there's generally additional costs associated with it. So folks, you got to have it in writing.
Yep. And like you said, Mike, you got to have a copy of it, because I promise you that the banquet staff who are working your meeting, they have copies of the BEOs in their back pocket. So many times I've been talking to somebody about what time lunch is, and we need lunch at 12:30, and they were thinking 12:15. And the first thing they do is reach in their back pocket and pull out that BEO and flip to the page and try and show me, well, here's where it says 12:15. And then I pull out the BEO and I say, well, My copy is dated more recently and it says 12:30.
So. Not that that ever happens.
No. Not that that ever happens. So there's going to be three documents that you're going to receive from the hotel. First is the proposal, which is the response to your request for proposal. Second is the contract. And then the third is the set of BEOs or the banquet event orders. So the proposal is confirms availability, and it just has the basic information about the pricing and policies. Once you accept the proposal, once you tell the hotel, yep, this looks good, then they're going to send you a contract. The contract has all the specifics about your meeting, the dates, the times, pricing, how you're going to be billed, the cancellation clause, and all of that. Anything that you negotiated during the proposal stage, stuff like reducing the room rental fee or waiving the room rental fee that we talked about last time. You need to make sure that's reflected in the contract. So you got to read through that contract very carefully and change anything that isn't correct based on your negotiations, right? So you want to pay particular close attention to the deposit and payment requirements. You want to make sure they have the dates and times correct. I had a lot of times where, because we start talking about different dates, that what they actually put in the contract is the wrong date. Cutoff dates for cancellation, the name of the meeting room you're going to be in. It's always a good idea to have that in the contract. And then anything to do with the attrition policy, like we talked about last time. Because once you sign and return that contract, you're on the hook.
Right. It's a legal document at that. I think sometimes people make the mistake of saying, well, lunch at 12, 12:15. Yeah, that's not important. I said 12:15. They put down 12. We'll work it out. Well, No. You're not going to work it out. I mean, there's a big difference to them of 12:15 versus 12 o'clock. You're not the only person that's in the hotel or the facility where, that they have to serve. And so they're back in the kitchen. They're timing the preparation of food based upon those times. And if it says 12 and you want it to be 12:15, or probably better examples the other way, or you want it at 12 and the contract says 12:15, you're likely not going to get it. And renegotiating that late in the process, you know, the day of or at 11:30.
Very hard.
Very hard to do.
Yeah, because they've staffed according to what's on the BEOs and the other meetings. And it could be that they only have one person who's putting the lunch out. And so they've staggered the lunches, right? There's one meeting that's at 12 and another meeting at 12:15 and another meeting at 12:30, so that one person can prepare or take out all of the tables with the buffets on them. And if now suddenly you want to move yours back to 12, that makes it hard. They don't have enough staff.
That's right. Yeah, and it impacts their ability to deliver for other customers as well.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I brought up BEOs somewhat flippantly too early because we really hadn't explained what they were in the various documents. So let's talk about BEOs, what they are. We've been alluding to it or talking about it already, but
sure.
Let's talk about BEOs.
So BEO stands for Banquet Event Order. About 4 to 6 weeks before your meeting, the hotel is going to reach out to you. And if they don't, you ought to be reaching out to them and saying it's time to prepare the BEOs. And the documents detail out every aspect of your event. So again, like we said, the banquet staff, the AV staff, everybody knows exactly what needs to happen and when it needs to happen and where it needs to happen. So every part of your meeting has its own BEO, and they're typically numbered so that you can tell the difference as you go from one part of the meeting to another. Let me give you an example to help this make more sense. There might be one BEO for how and when the room is set up. So there's going to be one BEO that says that the meeting is going to take place in salon A and B, and it's going to be set up classroom style at 11 a.m. Then there's going to be a different BEO that says lunch will be served in salon A and B at 12:15, and here's the menu. And then there's going to be another BEO that says there will be a snack break at 2:30 in salon A and B, and here's what's on the menu for the snack break. Each one of those activities or events has its own banquet event order with its own number. So it's going to have the menus, it's going to have the times, the number of guests, and the locations for all of that stuff that's going to happen, for all the meals, for all the breaks, for all the room setups, for AV. All of that, the start and finish times, when you need the AV equipment, pricing for all of that, all on the BEOs.
Yeah. And folks, make sure that that BEO matches what's in the contract, because often something will be in the contract and then you get the BEO and it doesn't match the pricing, for example, that you negotiated in the contract. So when there's two documents, there's an opportunity for them to be in conflict with each other. And so you're going to have to review that.
Yep.
And for you high eyes, you might want to get one of your high C friends to look at it.
Your eyes do start to cross if you're planning a big meeting, or you start looking at all of them, and it's easy to not see what you think you are supposed to be seeing instead of what's actually there.
For those who are relatively new to the podcast, when I say high I or high C, I'm referring to people's DISC profile, which is a behavioral profile instrument that we highly recommend to folks. Very, very powerful. But for those of you who are not detail-oriented, you might want to get one of your more detail-oriented folks or associates to take a look at it. So,
very good idea. Good. The other reason that you want to make sure that all the BEOs are correct, besides just that this is how the people who are going to be delivering these things know what to do, is because the BEOs are also what the hotel is going to use to calculate your final bill. So that's an important piece. If something was incorrect around pricing on the BEO, it's going to be harder. It's not impossible, but it's certainly going to be harder later for you to get that corrected on the final bill. Much easier to correct it in advance. And all you have to do when you're going through and reading the BEOs, if something is missing or something is wrong, you just write it in. You just correct it by hand.
Right. Can you go back a second? I just want to be clear, and I think it's probably clear, but just in case. Folks, like Danny said, the BEO, that document is what the manager, the person you've negotiated this thing with, is what they use to communicate with the staff about what to do, how to set it up. There's no other document, there's no other communications that happen between the hotel management, the banquet management, and the staff doing it. The BEO is how they communicate it. And it's the only way in which they communicate it. So if you have a side agreement with the banquet manager, for example, about how something is going to be set up, and it's not in the BEO, the staff who actually have to execute it will never know. Trust me, they will never know. There won't be a side conversation. Oh, by the way, Jack, remember, the client wants X set up on the back table. It's not going to happen. If you want it to happen the way you plan it, it has to be in the BEO. I cannot say that strongly enough.
Yeah, most hotels are not having, they don't have meetings with, for example, the banquet staff or the sales or the catering staff, the people who are in the office that are signing the contract with, and the staff who are implementing, the banquet staff, the housemen. There are not meetings between those people where they sit down in most hotels where they're sitting down and going through everything and talking about it. I have a feeling probably in higher end hotels, you know, maybe the Ritz-Carlton, they probably do that. But at most hotels that you're probably going to be using for business meetings, that's not happening. The BEO is how those things are communicated. So you got to make sure it's on there. So we recommend that you request the BEOs at the same time that you are doing the contract. This is not normal for most hotels. Most hotels are going to probably say, oh, well, we'll do that a month or two out. But you absolutely can push a little bit and say, no, we'd like it at the same time as when we do the contract, or sign the contract and then immediately request the BEOs. I've only ever had a handful of hotels that have said, no, we won't do BEOs until you sign the contract first. Fairly often, particularly if you're going back to properties that you've been to before, they can replicate your BEO from the previous meeting if it's going to be your same setup, and they can send you those at the same time as the contract. In our experience, over the last year or so, it's gotten harder to do this. So we're recording in October of 2015, and as the economy has continued to recover and people are doing more meetings and traveling more, hotels are getting more choosy and selective about the things that they'll agree to. So this has definitely gotten more difficult than it was 2 or 3 years ago, but it's still possible. And the reason we recommend that is because the BEO is, as we said, it's so much more detailed than the contract, and getting anything that you can in writing the sooner rather than later you know, just again, helps reduce your risk. Like we talked about when we were talking about asking for deposits to be waived and that type of thing. And increases the chance that the hotel will deliver on what they promise. The sooner that you get it in writing, just increases the chances that you'll actually get what you want.
Exactly.
All right. So that is the documentation, and that's all about BEOs. So we have a couple of lessons that I think it would be helpful, Mike, if we share that we've learned the hard way.
Yes.
when you are reviewing your contract.
When you do something like hundreds of times, I don't know how many conferences we've done in total, but we've done this hundreds, not that.
Yes.
We've done this hundreds of times. And so when you do something hundreds of times, you get a few lessons. So pay attention, folks, unless you want to learn the hard way again.
So lesson number one, if your meeting is more than one day, make sure you have a 24-hour hold on the meeting room, which means the hotel can't book another group into that room between the time your meeting ends the first day and the time it begins the next day.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you're talking about not like this has ever happened to us. So it's like you have like a conference room, they say you start go from 8 to 5:30. Right.
Yes.
And then you have something else. You have another conference at 8 to 5:30 the following day, and they decide they want to put they're gonna have a dance event, some huge party, the dinner dance or whatever. And it goes to like 3 o'clock in the morning, and you walk in the next morning, and it is just a disaster.
There's glitter all over the floor.
Glitter, yeah, like that. Whatever happened.
Beer bottles.
Yeah. Yeah. Just made my imagination. Yeah.
That's no fun. It's not. You walking into your meeting room the next day and finding out that
the glitter bomb just went off.
Glitter bomb went off and it smells like beer, and there's still the dance floor set up in the middle of your room, and it's, you know, your AV's all been taken down. I mean, and you have to, you know, run around and get everything reset. That's not any fun.
Hey, and for you folks who still think that glitter bombs are fun and funny and amusing, dudes, they're really not, particularly at the beginning of a conference. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, lesson number two. Confirm that there are times on the BEOs for you to set up and test AV and rehearse before your meeting. If your meeting begins first thing in the morning, like 8 o'clock, that means that you might have to go in the afternoon or the evening before to set up and test. And it's much better to have all of that done the night before, even if it means that you're staying up until 10 or 11 o'clock versus rushing around the morning of your meeting. You want everything set up, tested, and ready to go. Our standard is an hour before the participants are scheduled to arrive. So if your meeting is scheduled to begin at 8, you ought to be ready to rock and roll by 7 o'clock.
Right. And folks, just to be clear, we've done this hundreds of times, and our standard is an hour beforehand. If this is the first time you're doing something like this, then I'd recommend 2 or 3. I mean, an hour is not enough. There's so many things that can go wrong, particularly the first time you've done it, that an hour is really not giving yourself a lot of time.
Yeah, the hour will fly by if you're having problems. I mean, you'll think, oh, I got an hour to solve this problem. The projector's not working. And before you know it, 30 minutes has gone by, and now people are starting to come in, and your projector's still not working, and you're trying to deal with that, and people are coming in, and they're wanting to talk to you, and you're wanting to talk to them because you want that time to greet people and welcome them. That helps people participate more when they feel like they've chatted with you before the meeting starts, or you may have business that you need to discuss before the meeting starts, and there you are messing with the projector, and it's just stressful.
Right, and our standards are that half an hour prior to the meetings when people are going to start showing up, right? So you have to meet and greet them and talk to them and all that. So when an hour before is really only a half an hour.
Right.
In terms of slack time to deal with unforeseen problems.
And then the high seeds show up at 55 minutes before.
Right. And distract you while you're trying to solve your problem.
Your problem.
They don't, but the high seeds don't talk to you. So
that's true.
They're not so bad. It's the high eyes that show up early you got to worry about.
Because they want to talk.
All right. Go on. Sorry.
All right. Lesson three. Cross out on your contract and your BEOs any statement that about the hotel, and this is usually what it says, something like, we reserve the right to change your meeting room location at any time without notice.
Strike it. Strike it.
Strike it out.
Big, bold, black marker.
Yes.
Strike it out.
It's pretty standard, and most contracts say it, and it's often included on the BEOs as well. Just put an X through it, just cross it out. They put it in there because they want to be able to move groups around, particularly if your group isn't very big, and a larger group comes in and wants that space. They want to be able to move you around and stick you in a different room. But you've already spent so much time, as we talked about earlier, figuring out which room is going to work the best for you and work the best with your setup, that if you get in there and they've said, oh yeah, we just moved you to this other room, you don't know what that room looks like.
Effort wasted. Just yep. Complete. And do we ever get pushback on striking that?
I never have.
Yeah, I think it's this is one of the things, strike it and you won't get pushback.
Don't ask. Don't say, can we take that out? Just take it out and sign the bottom.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so our next point is about knowing who the players are in the hotel. So it's really helpful if you know who's who. And it also is helpful if you have some idea of kind of the hotel lingo that they're going to use and the verbiage, because that sends a message that you've done this before. This is not your first rodeo, which can be useful. In resolving problems, right? If they feel like, wow, I'm talking to somebody who's done this before, then they're more likely to kind of step up and try and get it right than if they feel like they're dealing with somebody who doesn't really know what's going on. So the most senior staff person on property is the general manager or GM. If you can, we recommend you get the GM's name, phone number, and email address ahead of time. That's going to be pretty hard to do. They're usually fairly well protected, but sometimes you can. And if you can't, that's okay. But you know, it's good to try, because if there's a problem later and you need to contact the GM, the staff might be reluctant to share that when they know that you're contacting them about a problem.
Right. So, and nobody calls the GM up to tell them how great a job,
how great everything is. No,
unfortunately. Right?
And they don't want their boss or their boss's boss or their boss's boss's boss to know that they couldn't handle something, right? So if you can get it ahead of time before there's a problem, then that's good. But on the flip side, Mike, right? If you have a great experience, we recommend that you be the exception. You let the GM know, hey, we had a great experience, right? Because they you're absolutely right, Mike. They are only going to hear complaints. So they'll really appreciate and remember you and remember your company, that you were the one in 99 who actually said something nice.
Yeah. And yeah, that's why we recommend you be nice this entire process, because
yes,
if you've been there before and you've been nice, and they can make allowances, they can make deals, right? And just like, you know, just like everybody listening to this podcast, we tend to do that kind of stuff for people we like.
Absolutely.
That's the way the world works.
Okay, the next kind of level is the manager on duty. And this is the acronym is the MOD. This is the person who's typically going to be the most senior person on property. So it changes as the shifts change, right? So if you have an issue after hours, the MOD is probably going to be the person that you'll need to reach out to help you fix it. They'll have phone numbers for other staff. They'll have keys to get into all the locked rooms and security codes. And they have the authority to make decisions around solving your problem. Now, we recommend you don't be the person who quickly escalates to the MOD, right? Try to work with the staff that is assigned to you and trying to help. But if you can't get them to help you, then go to the front desk, ask the person working the front desk, can I please speak to the MOD? And then stand at the front desk and wait for them to come out. Don't if you go back to your meeting room because you're trying to get stuff out, they're going to forget about you and they're not going to come find you. So go stand and wait for them to come out and then explain the problem that you're having while being nice.
Right. And there's a whole escalation process. You wait calmly for 5 minutes. And then after 5 minutes, you start tapping your fingers on the counter. And then you cross your arms.
Sighing.
And you sigh. Sighing, yes. Sighing is one of the phases. There's certain, but
very loud.
We're not going to go into all those things.
No. Now, we recommend that you work with your sales rep or the catering person that you booked with as much as possible, because you already have a relationship with them. They understand your meeting and your needs. They'll be able to take care of what you need, or they can call the person who does. But if you're on property after hours, it's likely that that person isn't there because most of them are, you know, are working 8 to 5 or something like that. Or if they're working nights, it's usually only going to be on weekends when there's big events. So if you're going to be there after hours setting up, then ask your point of contact, ask the person you've been working with up until now, who will be my point of contact after you leave for the day? Who should I reach out to if there's a problem? Because they probably have a second shift person or a backup person assigned to your meeting or just on property to deal with things. That's probably somebody different than the MOD. All right, next is the catering or the banquet staff. And these are the men and women who set up your room. They bring the food out, they serve, they clean up after the meals, they keep your beverages and your snacks refreshed. And I gotta tell you, these are some of the hardest working people in the hotel. So treat them well. Take care of them. They will usually have name tags on. Yeah. Pay attention. Use their names. Tip them. Trust us, guys. Nobody tips these folks. And when you do, you will stand out and you will get better service as a result. They'll probably try and say no. They'll say, no tip is necessary. Insist. Make them take it.
Yeah, look, folks, this is terribly important. We have, every time we do a conference, we have a tub that gets shipped out with all the supply materials. And in that tub is one of those accordion folders. And in one of those sections is an envelope with cash for tips, right? It's part of our plan. It's part of XU. We include several $100 in there for tipping folks. It's that important. And we don't leave it to chance. It's part of the process.
Absolutely.
And the reason being is because, well, we like to be nice people. And secondly, it's more effective. It works. We get better service. Our customers, our attendees at our conferences have a better experience because we do that.
Absolutely. We have at properties that we go back to several times a year. For example, I'm thinking of Chicago off the top of my head. We've been going to this property in Chicago. I think this is the third year. And we have staff that we've been working with since the beginning, which is unusual because hotel staff typically turns over a lot. But they request to be assigned to our meeting because they know we're going to take care of them.
Exactly.
We're nice. They take care of us. Yep.
Just kind of bubbled up as kind of a general managerial principle. If you're a manager, listen to this, or a professional. Like, there's some things that work. Don't leave it to chance. Build a process that you do it every single time. I'm not naturally a people person. So, tipping is not something that I tip very, very well, but it's a learned habit. It's not something that I would naturally do. So, of course, they're doing their job. That's what they're getting paid for. I don't have to give them extra money, right? But tipping helps. So, anyways, institutionalize this. Put a process in place to make sure that stuff happens. Even little things like tips.
Often at our conferences, we don't have sodas out all day. We have coffee and water, but we don't always put soda out all day. And sometimes there's people who are like, I really want a Coke at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And if you've tipped that banquet staff at 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and then you come up to them at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and say, hey, can we just have a couple of Cokes? Yeah, sure. And they'll go get it. Absolutely. And that stuff magically doesn't show up on your bill.
It's magic.
Just magic.
Okay. What's the next group of people?
All right. Next is the AV staff. And these are the folks who are responsible for setting up your AV equipment, helping with technical problems, putting up the screen, hooking up the projector. They might be employed by the hotel, or they may work for a company that the hotel has outsourced that to. And I'm seeing much more of the outsourcing.
Yes.
Over the last couple of years, it's more and more common where that's outsourced. So if possible, get the name and contact information of the AV staff prior to your meeting. If it's a different company, if they're outsourcing it, it's a good idea to call ahead of time and confirm everything. Again, it's all going to be on the BEOs and in writing, but it's a good idea to verbally talk through it with them as well. Because at that point, when you're on site, if there's a problem, the hotel can't do anything about it because they're outsourcing it to this other company. So you want to make sure you have a relationship with that AV company in case there's a problem.
Yeah. If they're on site and they don't have the stuff in the van, the equipment you need in the van, that's not good. It's not like they can go to a supply room at the hotel. Oh, I'll go get that projector you need. No, they have to bring it.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's all the people who are at the hotel. So next we're going to talk about shipping. If you're shipping stuff ahead of time, we have a few pointers on what to do. First, you need to know the shipping time required to get your supplies there in time. It can get really expensive really fast if you start shipping stuff express or overnight. So what we do before every conference, about 2 months out, is we actually go, we use FedEx, and we go on FedEx, and we do a kind of like a dummy shipment and figure out how long is it going to take to go from where we're shipping from to this specific hotel, so that we know if we're shipping ground, it's going to take 4 days, which tells us how soon out, or you know, how far out from the meeting we need to ship. We also put our own labels on everything. So we don't just use the shipping label provided by FedEx or UPS. We have our actual, we use these big full sheet, like 8.5 by 11 labels with Manager Tools logo. We put 3 on each box, 1 on the top and then 2 on the sides. It has our logo, it has our name, has the phone number and email address and name of the contact person who's going to be on site. This is very helpful in helping to identify your boxes faster. That's why we do these big labels, because chances are you're gonna ship stuff, they're gonna put it in a big storage room on some shelf somewhere. You need it at 11 o'clock at night. It's really helpful to be able to say, it's a big blue Rubbermaid tub and it has a big white label on it that says Manager Tools.
Yeah.
It helps you just find it faster. Definitely recommend if you're shipping multiples that you number the boxes, as in box number 1 of 4, number 2 of 4, number 3 of 4.
That's terribly important. One, it helps the hotel staff. So when you call them, say, hey, did you receive all our boxes? They look down, you ship 4. They look down and say, they see 3 boxes. Go, yep, got them all.
Got them all.
Right.
Nope.
No, they don't. Right. So you want to make sure you know, and you can tell them when you call them to see if they've gotten it, how many boxes you shipped specifically, and, you know, and labeling them helps tremendously.
Yes.
I've messed this up before, so don't do it. not fun.
All right. After you ship, you're going to track your shipments with whoever you're shipping with, confirm delivery. Once you have that confirmation from the shipping company, then you also need to confirm receipt with the hotel, right?
Wait a minute. But FedEx said they got it.
Yeah. If only.
Right. So the key is not whether or not it got delivered to the hotel. Because it can be at the hotel and you not have it.
And you not have it.
Right?
That's right.
It's got to get to the hotel. And then it's got to get to the appropriate place, to the front desk or to the wherever they're collecting your boxes for your event. And believe it or not, that sometimes doesn't happen. FedEx delivered it, yet you don't have it.
Yep. It goes into that big storage room. And it's it reminds me of the end of the movie Indiana Jones, right? Where they put the Ark of the Covenant in the big giant facility. It's in a box and it's way hidden way back.
That's right.
That's what you will feel like when you're trying to find your boxes at 11 o'clock at night. So confirm with your point of contact, your salesperson. We shipped. We have 2 boxes. FedEx confirmed delivery of the boxes, you know, yesterday. And if you have the name of the person who signed, that's additionally good information to let them know. And so-and-so signed for them. If you're staying at the hotel, once you get on site, we recommend that you do not have the boxes delivered to your hotel room. Just have them take them to your meeting room. So when you check in, they're probably going to say, oh, Mr. Ozan, we have 3 packages for you. And they'll ask you, do you want us to bring those to your room? No, don't bring them to my room.
Again, you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get ready. Right. And you got to get your, then you're going to go find a bellman and with a cart to deliver the boxes to the event room. It's a stress you don't need in the morning.
Yeah. That right there, just getting your boxes to the meeting room can be a 45 minute to an hour long deal, depending on what time of the day it is and how busy they are.
Right. And add an hour, right. So there's an unexpected 45 minutes in the morning. Now, all of a sudden that getting set up an hour before your event starts becomes almost impossible at that point. So trust us on this one. Trust us on all of them.
Trust us on all of them. All right. About 2 weeks before the meeting, reach out to your point of contact, confirm everything is still on track, review your BEOs again. By that, I mean, you actually get them out and read them over again yourself, because if it's been a couple of weeks or, you know, even 2 months, it's possible that you've had some agenda changes, or maybe there's just something you missed the first time. So always a good idea to review them again. Let the hotel know if you have any changes. Don't forget to send your final attendance numbers by the deadline listed. It's 72 hours out, or 3 business days. And if you miss that deadline, then you're probably going to get charged for the number that you initially quoted when you set up the contract. And that could be significantly more than the final number you end up with. So don't miss that deadline, because that could end up costing you more money.
Absolutely.
And then our last piece of guidance is to be nice throughout this entire process. I feel like Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse. The first rule is be nice. Oh, I should know, Mike, not to talk about movies with when you and I are recording.
No, you shouldn't, because I, you know, I understand. I know what you're saying. You know, Patrick Swayze said, you know, first rule is be nice. But then again, it's the same guy that ripped out somebody's throat in the movie. So I don't know. I don't know if that really works
well,
or not.
Well, be nice until it's time not to be nice.
Right. There you go.
Throughout this whole process, be polite, be professional. Understand that they have goals and objectives that they're trying to reach, and you have goals and objectives that you're trying to reach, and sometimes they're going to be at odds with each other. But if you have a good relationship with the hotel, with the staff that you're working with, that can really make a huge difference. Your meetings are going to be more productive because you're going to get better service. You will save time because you're not going to be constantly looking for a new hotel every time you need to book a meeting, because you have established relationships. We go to dozens of hotels every year for our conferences, and everything goes more smoothly, faster, and is just better when we go back to a property we've been to before. And that's because we invest big time in the relationship. We've done everything from send fruit baskets and muffins after a meeting to the staff, just to say, you know, we had a couple of tough things that we had to deal with, or we had some unexpected issues, and you guys did great with it. Thank you so much. And that kind of stuff goes a long way.
Yes, it does. So it's okay. So we've been nice. We've done all this stuff. We've had a great meeting. Okay. So now what do we do after the meeting? Are we done, or we got more stuff to do?
There's more to do. As soon as possible, when your meeting is over, do a hot wash. If you don't know what I mean by hot wash, there's a podcast for that. Basically, you write down, you list on a piece of paper, on one half of the paper, you list the things that went well. What went well? WWW at the top. And on the other half of the paper, you put at the top TALA, which means take a look at. And you write down the things that went well and the what went well side. And you write down the things that you want to improve or didn't go so good or maybe could have done better under the take a look at side. It's a very fast, easy way to capture things that you might forget, but would be helpful the next time you have to plan a meeting. And it could be everything from the very start, from when you started looking at locations through the actual meeting itself. And it doesn't take very long. We usually do ours in, you know, less than 3 minutes after each conference.
And having listened to this series, hopefully your what went well and take a look at will be, your take a look at will be much shorter, having learn from Danny's vast experience here, I hope.
And then when you get the final bill from the hotel, you need to sit down and go through it with a fine tooth comb. You want to compare all the pricing that was on the contract and the BEOs to what you were charged based on your final guaranteed numbers on the bill. And you're going to need to get your calculator out. You're going to need to do the math. Not because the staff are dishonest or they're trying to cheat you. It's just, you know, they do hundreds of meetings and events every year, and sometimes they make mistakes. So go through and check every line item. Most hotels are going to send you a pretty detailed bill where they will list out, you know, breakfast, lunch, snack. It'll all typically be broken out. And so you can check and make sure. I would say probably 5 to 10% of the time, now maybe not 10%, maybe like 5 to 8% of the time, Mike, we have mistakes on our bills that always seem to go in their favor.
Yeah, it's funny how that.
I don't think I've ever had a bill mistake where we got charged less than we should have. Well, I think maybe once I have, and because we're honest, we told the hotel you undercharged us. So you got to go through that bill from start to finish. And then it would probably be a good idea to do some type of evaluation or survey with your attendees, particularly if it was in a location that you haven't been to before. You know, find out, did this location work for you, and those types of things, so that you can take all that into account when you're planning your next meeting.
Yeah. I think the key here is, after meeting, you absolutely want to learn from the experience and get better the next time. There's so much that can go wrong. There's so many lessons learned. And if you don't capture it in a form that you can hand to somebody else who might be in your role next time, you're just going to lose a lot of institutional knowledge. And for most people probably listening to this podcast, you don't do this very often. And so you have to have some way of recording the lessons learned so that the organization as a whole can learn, right?
Yeah. When when I worked at the Cancer Society, we would do one huge meeting a year, like 500 people. And we would always get out the hot wash notes from the previous year when we started planning and just review them, just read them, just to remind ourselves what were the things that, you know, we said we needed to work on, and what were the things that that everybody liked that we want to make sure we do again.
Right. Yeah. And that's key, right? I mean, go listen to if you haven't listened to the Hot Wash podcast, you really should. Recommend you do so very highly. It's something we use a hot wash for just about everything we do. And it's amazing the learnings you get out of it when you just spend 5 minutes thinking about what went well and taking a look at. Not a big deal, very easy to do, and very, very powerful.
All right. Can you believe we're done?
No, actually, I'm sure. I think our audience is probably going, is there part six? Are we done?
Can we want something else? We are done. Is this like does this have like the most parts ever?
I think so. And it's probably one of the most detailed things we've done for sure. When you talk about operational kind of stuff, and long for something that a lot of people are not going to do, right? But again, when you have 800 podcasts, this is something managers do, something that professionals do. And if you think about Managed Tools more of a library versus a daily radio show, right? There's over 800 podcasts out there, and this particular podcast, although long and detailed, is an important piece if you look at kind of the compendium of all the things managers and professionals need to know. So,
awesome.
I thank you, Danny. This is really good knowledge here. I just don't really think there's any place you could find this. I really don't. Maybe there's a dummies book, but I doubt the dummies books would have this amount of detail in it.
It was fun. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. See y'all.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one. So long.
This podcast was produced by Manager Tools. Manager Tools creates actionable management guidance every single week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face as a manager or a professional, go to www.manager-tools.com. Search for Manager Tools on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.